Track 1. Introduction and Altering Attitudes. Welcome to the home study course entitled You Made Me Hit You, Interventions with Male Batterers, sponsored by the Healthcare Training Institute. Our primary intent for this home study course is to provide quality education to foster your professional growth. The Institute has provided quality education since 1979 to thousands in the U.S. and Canada as well. Hi, my name is Brian Clark. I'll be the narrator of this CD. We appreciate that you've chosen our course as a vehicle for you to earn your continuing education credit. The purpose of this course is to assist you in increasing your knowledge regarding how to treat patients, clients, etc., who batter. As each case study is given, if the concepts seem to be applicable to your situation, I encourage you to turn your CD player off and make a few notes regarding the application of the principle to your setting. However, these notes are for your purposes only and are not to be sent to the Healthcare Training Institute. Regarding completion of the answer booklet, at the end of each CD track, a question is asked. This question corresponds with a question in your answer booklet. Merely write the correct letter on the blank line that precedes each question. Keep in mind there's nothing tricky or hard about these questions. They're merely intended to verify the playing of the CD. These questions are sequential and deal with the section of content that preceded it. For this reason, to facilitate answering each question, you might read the question from the answer booklet prior to listening to that CD track. By knowing what the question is ahead of time, you'll know the content to listen for that contains the answer. So, just a hint, after you answer a question, read on to the next question in order to give you a heads up to listen for content that contains the answer. For the purpose of brevity, most generally, I'll use the term therapists or mental health professional. However, don't let these terms deter you from applying the concepts to your situation. When you hear the word therapists, if your job title is social worker, psychologist, marriage and family therapist, mental health counselor, professional counselor, resident director, program assistant, etc., merely substitute the appropriate term that's the most meaningful to you. In short, don't let my use of the term therapists cognitively deter you from hearing the content of a track because your job title is school counselor, for example. I'll also use the term client for the purposes of brevity. However, if you deal with patients, residents, students, consumers, etc., transpose client to the term that's the most meaningful to you in your work setting. In addition, it's clear that not all batterers are male and all battering victims are female. However, for the purpose of brevity in this course, we'll generally refer to the batterer as a male and the victim as a female. By no means is this an attempt to diminish the legitimacy of cases in which the reverse occurs. So when I refer to a male batterer, in your mind, if you have a female batterer, mentally transpose the terminology in order to hear the essence of the treatment message. So let's get started. We'll discuss such topics as altering attitudes, team pacing and playfulness, the three stages of abuse, red flags to violence, expanding choice points, over-controllers versus under-controllers, masked dependency, nice guy positioning strategies, the invisible dragon of shame, checkpoints for change, goal setting, problem goals, and therapeutic ruts. First of all, let's look at ways in which group intervention is used in altering the attitudes of clients who batter. As you know, group sessions help a client to expand his social network. For example, Daniel, age 30, found that group members were willing to help him become non-abusive to alter his attitudes. Daniel had been married to Sarah for 5 years. He was court-ordered into the anger management group after a battering incident followed his son's birthday party. Through the course of several sessions, Daniel stated, "It was my son Jake's first birthday, and Sarah had her mom and sisters over for a party when I got home from work. I went into the living room and told Sarah to fix me a sandwich. She told me she would fix it in a minute. I told her I was hungry now, so she would fix the sandwich now. I grabbed her by the arm and threw her into the kitchen. Later that night, I slapped her. Then I started hitting her harder. She was screaming for me to stop. I ended up shoving her down and grabbing her neck till she was gasping for air just to keep her quiet. I guess the neighbors must have heard something and called the police." Have you found, like I have, that many court-ordered clients are confused as to why they're being referred to the anger management group? I often hear statements like, "I don't know why I'm here. They just told me to come," or, "I really don't have any problems, but I was told I had to be here so I could get my children back." Daniel expressed his confusion when he stated, "It's not really my problem. She's the one with the anger." As you can see, Daniel was trying to reflect the blame away from himself and onto Sarah. He stated, "I work all day and make all the money, and she just stays at home with our son. So it seems like the least she can do is make me dinner. But it all happened so fast, I didn't really know what I was doing. Sarah asked for it. She wasn't listening to me. I had to make her listen somehow. Well, at least I didn't kill her." Before entering the legal system, Daniel didn't recognize his behavior as abusive. Thus, he saw no reason to change. I found that three methods of altering attitudes were helpful with Daniel. As I discuss these methods, think about how you might use them with your Daniel. Number 1. Broadening definitions. I found that Daniel's statement, "Well, at least I didn't kill her," summed up his definition of abuse. Like many batterers, Daniel needed to be educated regarding domestic violence law. To help personalize the definition of abuse, I asked members of the group to make a list of behaviors they considered abusive. I wrote their answers on a flip chart. Answers ranged from pushing to slapping to choking. After working on this list, it became more clear to Daniel that abuse has a much broader definition than the one he had learned by observing his father's pushing and slapping of his mother. Thus, to Daniel, abuse was a normal way of communicating. Number 2. Learning empathy. After providing information about the law, I began to explore the area of empathy with the group. Like many of your clients, Daniel needed to move from denial of responsibility to feeling empathy for Sarah. How do you help your clients move from denial to empathy? With Daniel, I found it helpful to have him do an actions versus consequences analysis. Here's how this analysis worked. The first step in evaluating the consequences was having group members describe their most violent actions in as much detail as they could. Daniel described another incident of choking Sarah until she started to go limp. At first, he was only able to identify the consequences or negative aspects that affected him. These consequences included the arrest, court involvement, and the very real possibility that Sarah might leave him and take his son with her. I wanted to increase Daniel's awareness of what he might consider the payoffs of abuse. When I asked Daniel, "What do you think were the payoffs of your actions?" he drew a blank. I urged Daniel to recall the point when he chose to use violence against Sarah. In addition to identifying the initial point of violence, Daniel needed to identify just why he felt violence was necessary at that moment. I asked Daniel what went through his mind when he started hitting Sarah. Daniel stated, "It was pretty soon after Jake was born, and I felt like Sarah was being lazy. She was using the fact that she'd just had a baby to boss me around and make me responsible for Jake." Daniel said, "She was nagging me, and that drives me up the wall. I guess I just thought I had to shut her up. I threw her across the floor and kept punching her in the head. She didn't say another word for the rest of the night." I asked him if he felt that getting her to shut up was the benefit, and he said, "Yeah, she stopped nagging me, didn't she? I got my way, and afterwards I didn't feel so tense. Plus, we're always really happy for a while after we make up." I asked Daniel, "What did you really want during the incident?" I felt that once Daniel could understand just what he wanted out of the abusive situation, he could then evaluate how to get a similar payoff without violence. Daniel stated, "I wanted to get through to her, for her to know I'm the boss. Somebody has to be in charge. You can't have two captains on one ship." In a group session, I asked the group to brainstorm ways they communicate their feelings without using violence. This helped Daniel to identify possible alternative behaviors he could use rather than abuse. Number 3. Recognizing the effects of the media. In addition to broadening the definitions and learning empathy to alter attitudes, we discussed the effects of the media. Do you have any baby boomers in your batterers group? I feel that many, many years of movie watching, as well as the themes of many earlier TV shows, helped to create some clients' hostility towards women. This media reinforcement can make broadening the client's definition of violence even more of a challenge. Here's how recognizing the effects of the media worked in a group setting. I asked the group to make a list of their role models and those role models' qualities. Ernest, age 57, made a list containing names of tough guys like Clint Eastwood, John Wayne, and even The Undertaker, a wrestler he had seen on TV. When I asked Ernest why he considered these men to be role models, he said, "They're strong. They know what they want, and they know how to get it. They are real men who don't take any crap from anybody, especially their women." Talking about media role models helped Ernest and the rest of the group to better understand how these role models had trained them to think of women in an objectified manner. Ernest found that he associated being a real man with keeping his woman in line. After the exercise, Ernest was beginning to understand that the tough guy image he tried to follow had nothing to do with creating a successful relationship. As you may know, the concept of a working, successful relationship was one that hadn't occurred to Ernest. For Daniel, whom we discussed earlier, his marriage was all about dominance and forcing his will onto Sarah. Daniel stated, "To me, to be top dog is what it's all about. I can't let her push me around. If I let her do that, what kind of man would I be? God made man first, which means men are supposed to rule women. A wife is supposed to do what her husband tells her to, and damn it, she better." I suggested to Daniel that there were other media examples of men who didn't need to dominate women in order to show their strength. In this track, we talked about three methods of altering attitudes. Those methods were broadening definitions, learning empathy, and recognizing the effects of the media. In the next track, we'll discuss the advantages of working as a male-female therapist team. Question 1. What are three methods of altering attitudes in male batterers?